it's hard for me to say that it's my favorite show because I feel that a lot of it is pretty much the same. But it uniformly makes me feel like very good about life and other people. So big shouts out to that program for that reason.
That's nice.
Yeah. Plus, it's got all kinds of kooky New York characters.
What's your favorite town?
The kind of stuff you'd only see in New York City.
The big,
come on, you gotta know this one.
Oh, I should. No, this is embarrassing. The big,
You know that it's the big something.
Yeah. I know it's big.
Uh-huh.
And I know it's something. The big...
The big easy.
That's not it. That sounds right. Like, it sounds familiar, but I know that's not it.
The big pumpkin.
Big pumpkin?
The big unit.
Is it pumpkin?
Is it a big pumpkin? I don't know. What would make something a big pumpkin? What makes New York the Big Apple? Has this been discussed ad nauseum?
Actually, I don't know what makes it the Big Apple.
Why is it called the Big Apple? New York, New York. The most populous city in the United States is known by many names, but it's most famously known as the Big Apple. The nickname the Big Apple originated in the 20s in reference to the prizes, or quote-unquote big apples, rewarded at many racing courses in and around New York City, but wasn't officially adopted as the city's nickname until 1971 as a result.
So, I assume these were horse races?
I think so.
And did the prizes go to the horses?
Maybe to, like, the people who owned the horses, probably.
Because it seems like the person who would most enjoy a big apple would be a horse.
Yeah, I think that might be, like, a metaphor. Like, this is, it's kind of a metaphor and a metaphor.
Because,
like, you know, probably at the horse track when they say, this is for the big apples, that...
It means the horse, I gotcha. The horse is going to earn a big apple.
Indirectly.
And you're going to win some money.
Yeah, because you'll be able to afford the biggest apples with all the money that you got.
Right.
So it just seems like big apple is, it's just like the biggest and the best. It's the big apple.
The big... Now, if you were to construct, like, backward construct an etymology for the big pumpkin.
Okay. The big pumpkin.
What would that be?
The big pumpkin is, like, Cincinnati, Ohio.
Why?
Because it's terribly disappointing.
You think a big pumpkin would be, I mean, big, I would say pumpkins get much, much bigger than apples. As I'm sure you know.
Yeah, and it's not... It doesn't have anything to do with the quality of pumpkin, like, as a gourd or whatever. It just has to do with the fact that, like, when you think about something and you're like, oh, that was a big pumpkin, like, that sounds like something that
sounds
really
bad.
Stinks.
Like a mistake.
Yeah. Yeah.
Talk about a big pumpkin, yeesh.
Yeah. Maybe that was just a real big pumpkin, you know?
Yeah.
That's where I'm coming from. I don't really mean to make a value judgment on pumpkins. I think pumpkins are okay. They're good for cat laxatives.
Is that... I can't believe you how much you know about cat laxatives.
In the littlest league possible. In the littlest league possible. Gonna make a big splash.
Hello and welcome once again to Tater Tots, the only podcast where we take a deep dive on a Major League Baseball player who hit only one home run in the 2019 regular season. I'm Tim.
I'm Duncan.
And later on, we'll be talking about the outfielder for the NC Dinos of the KBO, Aaron Altair, and the, oh boy, the outfielder for the Acereros de Monclova? How'd I do?
I think that sounds good.
With the Mexican Baseball League, that's outfielder Rajai Davis. But first things first, why don't we add some inches to my vertical? Last week, on our newest segment, add some inches to your vertical, the segment in which we use the infrastructure of this podcast to guilt me into exercising, and indirectly to allow me to realize a lifelong dream of mine, which is to dunk a basketball.
I think you have it backwards. I think that's directly and indirectly is to force you to exercise.
Fair. Also, last week we talked about averaging out jumps rather than relying on one measurement. I'll tell you what, there was not a lot of variance
mm-hmm.
among the three jumps, they were pretty much the same.
That's okay. I still think that you want to keep doing that.
And I also updated my sort of running jump to allow for three steps instead of one. One and a half.
I
did like 5 inches. So as of today, if I attempted to dunk a basketball, I would fail, but I would get up to 100 inches. I went to a basketball court on Saturday and found that I was able to lace my fingers through the bottom of the net, which it felt pretty good.
Okay.
So.
Do you feel like you've made progress?
No, I think I could already do that. I mean, I can't say for certain because it's not often that I like go out of my way to try to do that, but I'm pretty sure that that was not new. I visited the skate park Saturday morning. Lots of good things to jump on there.
Yes.
We need to talk about weightlifting because I don't know anything about it. How much weight should I be able to lift? Like my body weight?
No, there's no, everyone wants to know that question, including me, but there's really no number. The answer is whatever is very
difficult.
And
you think that if I, like, just instead of making a recurring purchase on a gym membership, if I made a one-time purchase of some dumbbells, which are pretty heavy, that I would max out too quickly?
It really depends on your program. For me, obviously, I lift heavy weights because I'm trying to build muscle. And I could not, you know, you can't squat 200 pounds with dumbbells. Like, you can. Some people do it, but it's just very difficult. It's more grip strength exercise than anything. And you also have to have a bunch of dumbbells because you're going to want to vary the weights. But maybe. On the other hand, like, I only know so much about the specific kind of weightlifting program or, you know, field that I'm involved with. And some people do a lot of things with dumbbells, especially if you do a lot of high intensity training for reps, hypertrophy training, which is, you know, lower weight, higher reps, which might be what you're looking to do. I don't know, probably a combination of both.
That GQ article is surprisingly unhelpful in this for like what type of lifting to do. I think maybe I'll double what
what did it say.
I seem to remember that it had only explained which exercises to do and not like, but maybe I just didn't see that.
What do you mean, what would you be looking for as opposed to which exercises to do? You want to know how many sets?
It says 3 sets of 10 reps of squats, deadlifts, and Bulgarian split squats.
Okay.
But like the only, like it doesn't explain how to progress.
Well, that's in the text of the article.
The way this guy did it. Sorry. He increased weight and dropped reps by 2, and then 2 weeks after that, he added weight again and dropped reps again.
Right, and I think that's. I mean, that's kind of the standard way to do it, is you have a set of reps, or a range of reps, right? You're going to do this from 10 to 12 reps, so you do at some weight. And you'll do 10 reps, and the next time you do 11 reps, next time you'll do 12 reps, and then the time after that, you'll do 10 again at a heavier weight. But the important part is always to be challenging yourself. Whenever you feel like you can go up in weight or do more reps, you should be doing it.
I hate weightlifting so much.
That's why you have to be motivated by this podcast.
I mean, that's exactly why, because the rest of it I really don't mind doing. Weightlifting I hate. How much is a Planet Fit? Do you have Planet Fitness? Or Red?
No, I have Blink Fitness, but Planet Fitness is $10 a month.
Is it really? I can do that.
Yeah, it's wildly cheap.
Alright, I mean, if all I have to do is lift weights and stuff, that's fine, I can do that.
Yeah, but they don't...
You don't like their weight equipment?
I don't really, because they don't have actual squat racks. They just have what are called Smith machines, which are can lead to injury if you don't have very good form.
Gyms near me.
Or you can just do it with some dumbbells or kettlebells or whatever. Get some leg weights.
Well, it's on my list of stated goals for next week, so I'll do that research and decide what's the best course of action. In the meantime, yesterday was Leap Day. Today is March the 1st as we're recording. Yesterday was, of course, the one day every 4 years.
That's February correct.
Gets an extra day. And we celebrated. I celebrated by leaping. I don't know what you did, Duncan.
I was considering measuring myself, but I did leap quite a bit in honor
That's
of
good.
Leap Day.
You gotta, and in honor of Leap Day, we reached out to our listeners to find out how what the height of their vertical, and only my friend Josh replied. And Josh is tipping the scales at 2 feet. That's at
way to go, Josh.
Joshua, Joshua on Twitter. I hope he doesn't mind me plugging his Twitter to like 4 of my friends. I don't think he listens to this podcast.
Please let us know how high you can jump, and we'll share it on the podcast.
All right. How about a Todd Stove segment?
I would love to have one.
Yeah, fire up the old Todd Stove.
All right, let's see.
For maybe the last time.
Ever?
Not ever.
No.
I don't know. Everybody who's... one of the great benefits of having two monitors on which to compute is that it made this particular task, which I'd been meaning to do for a while... Well, I meant to do it last season, in anticipation of this season, but it was... No, wait. At some point, I wanted to figure out one by one where everybody had moved to or whether they had stayed. Mm. But it was incredibly tedious tabbing back and forth. So having an extra screen made this much easier. And it does seem like all of the tater tots have either moved or retired or gone to another league. Or in the case of Eric Haas, I couldn't find him on Baseball Reference.
What?
So I don't even know if he's a real guy. Apparently he is. He hit a home run last year, but now who knows?
Huh.
I'll look again. Did you look?
How's his name spelled?
Oh, I found him.
Oh.
Oh. We have him with a K, but he's Eric with a C.
A mistake.
That was my mistake. He's on the Tigers now.
Okay. So then what you mean to say is that traditionally, our Tot Stove segment is tracking the movement of tater tots around the off season, and now that we're deep into spring training, it seems that they've all found a home.
They've all pretty much found homes. Except for, has Ben Zobrist retired yet, or what?
It seems like he's quietly retired. I think we talked about this, so he's not signed with anyone, and I don't think that he will.
Pretty much retired.
Yeah.
Well, good. Okay. I mean, I'm glad that we were able to...
solve that mystery, kind of.
Clear that up, and now we can just kind of jump straight into the Todd of the Week 2 hours into the record.
I imagine this is like 10 minutes in for those listening, but we've been recording. Know that we've been recording for an hour.
Yeah. it's a firm editing hand. If it's not good, it does not stay.
Yeah. That's why our episodes are usually 6 minutes long.
All right, it's time for the Tots of the Week. This week we got a double tot. These two players hit home runs in their first plate appearances as Mets, a mere 2 days apart from one another. Of course, they're Rajai Davis and Aaron Altair. First up, when was it? May 23rd? Nope. Yes, actually, correct.
Wow.
May 23rd. Because that's when the Mets claimed Aaron Altair. It's Rajai Davis, his 3-run home run.
Ninth pitch of the at-bat coming to Rajai. And he lights one deep left field. Hit it toward the wall. That ball is out of here! Rajai Davis with a 3-run homer in his first at-bat as a Met. 6-1 New York. Rajai Davis pretending that Sean Doolittle is Aroldis Chapman, channeling his inner World Series home run. His first career pinch hit home run in his first at bat as a Met.
When it comes to this home run, you gotta say it was pretty good. It was a 3-run home run, and he hit it hard off of noted good pitcher Sean Doolittle.
Can you believe this is Rajay Davis's first career pinch hit home run?
I can hardly believe it. He's had quite a long career and played most of his career as a bench player. So that's pretty wild.
I want to know more about the pinch hit home run.
I think that there is someone notable who has the most pinch hit home runs. It's a statistic I've heard before.
I bet it's Jim Thome.
That's a good guess. Matt Stairs. Yeah, see, that sounds familiar to me.
Yeah, that's a better guess probably than Jim Thome.
Jim Thome started too much. It's got to be someone like Matt Stairs.
I remember Matt Stairs hitting a home run, pinch hit home run. Mm-hmm. Maybe that was Craig Wilson. Matt Stairs and Craig Wilson are two players that for some reason they look alike. Kind of. I think it's mostly that they're just both like beefy bench players that have at one time or another played for the Pirates. But it's Rajay Davis.
Yeah, Rajay Davis is fun. He's on the older end of the spectrum for a baseball player because he's 39 years old, and he's been playing baseball all that time. If I had to hazard a guess as to whether Rajay Davis enjoys baseball, I would say yes.
I would hope.
I mean, because he's one of these players who, if he wanted to retire, he could have. But as we discussed, instead of doing that for his age 39 season, he's going to go play in Mexico.
Yeah, fair.
You know, which I think is cool. And he's kept it up, right? Like, he's had a very up-and-down career. A lot of minor league time, not a lot of starting time, but he's always stuck to it. Pretty cool, in my opinion. I'll tell you this about him. He's from Connecticut.
Yeah.
And when he was in high school, he played baseball, football, and he was working on his own vertical because he was playing basketball as well.
Something in common with Aaron Altair, who's also got basketball in his history.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
He was drafted at a time when apparently there were no scouts in Connecticut. And in order to get seen by scouts, what he had to do was drive all the way to Pittsburgh to participate in an open tryout with the Pirates. According to his friend Charlie, he had to borrow gas money to get there. And apparently he was impressive enough that they wound up drafting him.
I can't believe that they couldn't get a scout to see him.
I think possibly people just didn't know about it. He wasn't like a big time prospect, right? They ended up drafting him in the 28th round.
Sure.
And I don't know. I don't know what the state of travel ball was back then. I think less. Mm. And
New London.
He probably didn't have enough money to participate in travel ball. I'm not sure. He had to borrow gas money to get to Pittsburgh.
Sure.
Interesting, I think. He had a commitment to the University of Connecticut. As you know, he did live in Connecticut. But he decided to go to the Pirates instead.
Learn about New London High School.
Is that where he went? No. He went to... He did?
New London High School.
I could have sworn I saw something different, but okay.
The New London High School Whalers. In March 2012, a clinic at the school operated by Child and Family Agency of South Eastern Connecticut began to provide condoms and birth control prescriptions to students.
Okay.
I bet that was controversial. Notable alumni include Rajay Davis.
One.
NBA player Chris Dunn.
Chris Dunn, of course. Just getting started. Excuse me. Is that one of the alumni?
Nope. That one was. That was such a powerful cough that it graduated from New London High School. John Ellis, who was apparently a baseball player from 1969 to 1981.
All right.
Major League Baseball player.
Keep going.
Poet and educator Jose B. Gonzalez.
Okay.
Civil rights attorney Peter Rinskopf.
All right. Rinskopf. Old Rinskopf, whom we all know.
NFL player Jordan Reed.
Okay.
USFL and NFL player Tim Reardon.
He shares your first name?
Yes, that's true, but not the last name.
Singer
and founding member of R&B vocal group En Vogue, Don Robinson.
Oh, okay.
And NBA basketball player and NCAA men's basketball coach Tyson Wheeler.
So it sounds like maybe a pretty good sporting school. They have a lot of notable sports professionals on their list of alumni.
Yeah, which is why I'm like, they couldn't get a scout out to
couldn't
see
this get guy a scout out to see Rajai Davis? They ought to have. I mean, he wound up being a productive Major League Baseball player.
Yeah, a lot of scouts really, in retrospect, kind of beefed it there.
Yeah, I think he should have been drafted earlier based on his production at the Major League level.
I'll tell you one thing about Rajai Davis.
What's that?
Apparently he was a pirate.
He didn't spend a lot of time with the Pirates. He spent six full seasons in the minors, which is a lot, especially considering that he was quite good in the minor leagues. He was a center fielder. He was drafted as a second baseman, but he was very fast, a shortstop in high school, and pretty good defensively. So I think he was mostly a center fielder in his career. And he did finally make the Pirates in 2006. He didn't do all that good, but the next year, 2007, he was a little bit better, which is why the Pirates decided to trade him to the Giants. The Giants said, well, maybe there's some potential in this big bat and defense of Rajai Davis. Pirates were looking for Matt Morris, starting pitcher, perhaps for a playoff push. Do you know why they made this move?
I'm so sure they were not making a playoff.
But it must be, right? Like, because they wanted to get a veteran starting pitcher in exchange for this young prospect.
The Pirates finished sixth in the NL Central in 2007 with a record of 68-94.
How come they made this trade?
I don't know, nothing better to do. What were the Giants up to then?
They were bad. They were bad as well.
What?
They made this trade on July 31st, like it was the deadline.
Yeah, I don't know why the trade happened.
Well, I'll tell you what about Matt Morris. He spent 2 years with the Pirates, and he was just very bad. Now, for some reason, as a Giants fan in 2006, I thought that Rajai Davis spent more time with the Giants than he did. It turns out it was only the 1 year, or 1.5 years. You're raising your hand.
Pure salary dump. It seems like the Pirates paid Matt Morris.
Yes.
The Pittsburgh, this is from ESPN, the Associated Press, by way of ESPN.
I'd love to hear this tidbit.
Pittsburgh Pirates acquired pitcher Matt Morris from San Francisco on Tuesday, an uncommon deal for a high-priced player by an out-of-contention team at the trading deadline. Pittsburgh sent rookie outfielder Rajai Davis and a player to be named to the Giants, who began shedding salary as they looked to rebuild one of the major's oldest teams.
Huh. That's interesting.
The Giants were looking to shed salary is what it came down to.
I'm sure Matt Morris cost a lot. He had been good with the Cardinals, and then the Giants signed him, and he was not very good. Okay. So that all kind of makes more sense. Anyway, Rajai Davis only spent 1.5 years with the Giants, and in that time, for some reason, he made something of an impression on me when I think of Rajai Davis, I think. Well, Giants legend.
Yeah.
He did serve as a backup for Dave Roberts or Barry Bonds, so he got a lot of playing time.
A lot of visible playing time, too, I would imagine.
I think a lot of people were paying attention to the Giants in that era.
Well, I just mean if you're a Giants fan and like the best player on your team has the day off, you're gonna want to know who's playing instead, you know?
Yes, and perhaps that's part of it. People frustrated with Rajai Davis, they said his production doesn't even come very close to Barry Bonds's.
No, certainly not 2007 era Barry Bonds.
So go figure. He was actually fine, as always. He stole a lot of bases, yeah. And then the Giants put him on waivers, and what happened was that he went to the A's, and they actually forced him to swim across the San Francisco Bay wearing ankle weights to go from one city to the other.
Are you picking up, like, is the game that it's because he had to drive to Pittsburgh one time?
Yep.
Or, okay. Just so, because there's more of these, and I just want to be prepared.
Sure, yeah, just for reference, I'm going to say a lot of things that are 100% true about the way that Rajai Davis transitioned from one team to the other. And they all stem from him having to drive to Pittsburgh once.
Because everybody knows how much he loves to travel in ways that are inconvenient.
Right. Like one time he had to drive, which is why he had to swim across the San Francisco Bay in this case.
Yeah, they made him do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, we heard you like driving.
They didn't offer to drive him there, so. Regardless, I mean, maybe because of that, it improved his leg muscles. And he actually had his best year with the A's that year. He became the starting center fielder, and he was very productive at the plate. He hit 305, 360, 423. And then after the 2010 season, the A's traded him to the Blue Jays and forced him to ride a freight train all the way to Toronto.
It's a long train ride.
It's a long train ride. No kidding. He had to sleep in the hay bales with the horses.
He was already 30 at this point.
I know. But he spent so long in the minor leagues.
Yeah.
That really kind of pushed his whole development curve back, which is why he's 39 now.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah. That's why he's 39.
That's one of the reasons he's 39. The other is probably because of when he was born.
Right.
So he spent 3 years with the Blue Jays, and he was fine. He did get hurt a couple times, but he also stole a bunch of bases. One time he hit 2 home runs in a game, and he participated in the longest game in Blue Jays history, which is kind of a fun little tidbit.
Yeah.
And then after that, he became a free agent. And the Tigers said, you seem like a valuable baseball player.
Yeah.
And they gave him 2 years and $10 million on the condition that he did push an SUV from Toronto all the way to Detroit.
They wanted to make sure, because if he couldn't make it, then it was like, oh, we're not getting our money's worth. We might as well cut
right.
this guy.
It's like checking out his medicals, you know? You're like, if you can't push an SUV all the way from Toronto to Detroit, then, well, I don't know if you're good enough to be on our team. Now, for the record, that's very close, right? Aren't they adjacent?
Yeah, it's not very far at all is what I was going
to
say.
They're adjacent to one another. He could have swam across the river, a la his journey from San Francisco to Oakland, but he had to actually push an SUV across the bridge.
You want to mix it up, yeah.
Yeah.
You got to keep things fresh for your highlight reel.
And then, perhaps for the same reason that he was good with the A's, I think that journey really built up his muscles, and he was good again. He stole his 300th base, and you know what kind of grand slam he hit?
Ultimate Grand Slam.
It was his first career walk-off hit.
Ooh, that's cool.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
There are worse ways to get a walk-off hit.
I would imagine so. Like, you could get hit in the head. Like Homer.
Or like the kid in that book. Yeah, that would be the worst way to just walk off.
Well, he spent 1 year with the Tigers, and then equipped with only a knife and a spoon, he dug his way to Cleveland, where the Indians awarded his effort with a $5.25 million contract.
Yeah, this is the only reason why I know who Rajay Davis is, really.
Yeah, because he hit a dramatic game-tying home run off Aroldis Chapman in Game 7 of the 2016 World Series. If you'll recall, that game very dramatically went into extra innings.
I do recall.
The Cubs wound up winning the World Series, and they were very excited.
That was a good game.
That's Rajay Davis's only World Series experience, and he surely made the most of it.
In the clip here that we listened to or watched,
yeah,
depending on if you're us or someone else, you know,
we should always just clarify.
It always comes down to whether you're us or someone else. The announcer kind of reaches pretty deep in his bag to get that sort of like on the forefront of the broadcast.
Yeah.
That one time Rajay Davis hit a home run in the World Series. I thought that it was like the 2016 home run. That's a cool moment.
Yeah.
It was odd. I don't know.
It doesn't rise to the level of a Steve Pierce. But it probably cements his legacy.
Yeah,
he has one of those home runs that people remember in probably the most memorable World Series of our lifetimes.
It's frustrating too, because it sort of came, it was for naught, you know. I remember when he hit that home run thinking like, wow, that'd be amazing if Rajay Davis was the hero of this whole like crazy World Series.
Yeah.
Improbable experience, and it wound up not going his way, which is a shame. What was I gonna say? Something about the Mets announcer. Oh, I didn't think that this home run rose to the occasion. Like, they could have talked about that at any point, maybe like at a moment when it was like a little quieter.
Yeah, but this time he did hit a home run.
He also hit a home run in that moment, so it was like, oh, remember another time he hit a home run?
That one was like, more memorable and more valuable.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry for complaining about this.
No, that's all right.
Can't believe Aroldis Chapman wasn't like Cubs.
Right? It was a big deal. They really rode him hard, and that's the they were blamed for him kind of breaking down in the World Series because he had pitched too much in the previous series, perhaps.
Probably.
And it might be true. But the Indians, they weren't enamored of Rajay Davis's performance, so they let him loose. And he actually invented a flying machine that enabled him to travel from Cleveland all the way back to Oakland. And that was powered only by a coordinated combination of pedaling and flapping his arms. So that's pretty cool.
It's like one of those old-timey, like one of the things that the Wright brothers designed that probably didn't work.
Yeah, but his worked. Right?
But he nailed it. Yeah, he got it right the first time.
Because usually with Da Vinci or the Wright brothers or whatever, they've got either flapping or they've got pedaling, and Davis's breakthrough was that he had both.
Well, the problem with both, and I mean, obviously, like, Rajay Davis is an incredible athlete,
right.
Very strong,
yeah, fast,
able-bodied,
quick.
So probably could keep up, but, like, the rate at which you pedal, I would think.
Very fast.
Outstrip the weight at which you could wave your arms.
I mean, it is a very athletically intense exercise. And to remind you, he did fly all the way from Cleveland to Oakland this way.
That's a long flight.
Yeah,
that's not,
it's like on an airplane that's like 5 hours. And trust me, this thing is not as fast as a commercial airplane.
Well, unless you're Rajay Davis. then it's just as fast.
Yeah, and we should clarify, Rajay Davis is Rajay Davis.
He is. Yeah. He's not us or you.
So there are like three categories of people, we would say.
Yeah, there's us, there's you, and then there's Rajay. There's three types of people in this world.
Yeah. And only one of them can fly a flying machine of their own invention as fast as a commercial airliner.
Unless you also happen to be Rajay Davis, which is possible.
Oh, that's a fourth category.
Is it?
Yeah, there's us, seems like there's you, there's Rajay Davis, and then there's you if you're Rajay Davis.
No, that's just Rajay Davis, or you. Or
right, because there could be another category, which could be us if we are Rajay Davis.
If we are Rajay Davis.
And then Rajay Davis if it's you.
Yeah. What? No, that's nothing. That's the same as Duncan.
Yeah.
It's the same.
Well, it depends. There's a principle in mathematics, what's it called? Where it's like, you know, certain things are the same, even if you reverse the order.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying.
Like, right, like, but maybe it's not in this case. Maybe it's not the same if you are Rajay Davis and if Rajay Davis is you.
No, that sounds like it's the same to
me. It does. It also sounds like it's the same to me.
Okay, let's wind up on Rajay Davis, maybe.
Okay, yeah, sorry. So where was he? Oakland? Well, they traded him again.
Yeah, what a
bummer. And he had to walk all the way around the United States through the Panama Canal on a pair of boat shoes, also of his own invention. Wow. So back around the Eastern Seaboard and up to Boston.
Yeah, really hardy shoes.
Yeah, pretty impressive that he did that. And
of all the things.
Yeah, he was okay with the Red Sox. Then the next year he had to travel back to Cleveland again, his second stop with the Indians. He went there on the back of an uncooperative camel. and then in 2019, the year we're discussing, he did sign another minor league deal, this time with the Mets.
Yeah.
And finally, when he got called up from AAA on May 22nd, he did take a two-hour Uber ride to Citi Field. He arrived in the third inning, and he entered the game in the eighth.
That's, I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
That's, I feel like that is something that you can kind of only do if you've been playing baseball a while.
Is to take a two-hour Uber ride and, oh, you mean arrive in the middle of the game.
Just kind of like show up and like.
Yeah, you definitely know. Wouldn't do that with a prospect, but he's been around the block. Literally, he's had to walk around the block hundreds of times.
So many thousands of blocks,
yeah. Yeah, this was actually kind of a big story when it happened. Because he stopped outside the stadium and took a picture with the Uber driver.
That's very cute.
Yeah, it was fun.
Last night, I had an improv show, and one of my friends who was on the improv team said that on their way, the Uber driver pulled over to go to the bathroom. And in the group chat, they said, my Uber driver is peeing.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, in the Uber?
That would be even worse.
Definitely worse. I was glad that the Uber driver pulled over. That happened to me on a bus one time. Did you know that?
I think I have heard that story.
Yeah,
and I'm always surprised it doesn't happen more often.
I figure they have to get breaks. Like, long breaks where they can, like, take care of themselves.
They do, but, you know, sometimes you gotta go to the bathroom.
I always make sure that I go to the bathroom before I work so that I don't have to, like, leave the counter.
Yeah, make sure not to drink too much water.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he hit that home run, what is it, we say, May 28th?
23rd.
The next day. It was his first plate appearance. He only played defensively on May 22nd. And he hit that home run. Pretty cool. And finally, just a few weeks ago, Davis, he braved the long walk all the way down to Monclova, Mexico, which he accomplished. I forgot I wrote this. I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Which he accomplished with... Oh, no, I'm laughing at my own joke. I'm sorry.
Get through it.
Okay. He braved the long walk to Monclova, Mexico with his legs tied to his arms.
I just want to stand up so I can try that.
Sorry.
Just, like, understand, like, sort of what he went through. I would imagine you'd have to grab,
yeah,
like, your calves or something. Oh, God. That's a punishment. That's a straight up, that's a real punishment that you can make someone do. That feels like... That feels like a punishment for treason or something.
Really? I kind of want to try it, to tie my arms and legs together and see how far I can walk. Certainly I couldn't walk all the way to Monclova like Rajai Davis did.
Like Rajai Davis can.
As you know, there's only one Rajai Davis, and then there's us, and then there's you.
Unless you're Rajai Davis, then there's two of you? I don't know.
So that's it. We'll see how he does in Mexico this year. I'm glad he's still playing baseball. He must love it. I mean, to brave all of these dangerous voyages just to keep playing, I think that speaks to his character.
For sure. All right. Let's talk about 2 days later, Rajai Davis, presumably already on his way to Mexico for how long that would have to take.
Yes.
When Aaron Altair dons the blue and orange and digs in for his first plate appearance at Citi Field. Here's a dinger.
Aaron Altair, who makes his Mets debut. And the Mets hoping that Altair, who's a terrific athlete, can find a little magic in a different uniform. And he hits it to deep left. Forget it. Altair takes it deep. Off the facing of the second deck. Can you believe this? The Mets keep plugging in spare parts, and they keep producing. Aaron Altair crushes one, and the Mets are back in front 7-6. Just 2 days ago, Rajai Davis hit a home run in his first plate appearance as a Met, and now Aaron Altair does the same, and it puts the Mets back in front.
That Aaron Altair, man, he can really bang. Which is to say that I really like that home run. I appreciated that they got all the camera angles in there. So if you're not us and you're only listening, do watch the clip because it's a sweet swing.
It is. I mean, he hits the ball so dang hard.
Aaron Altair's kind of whole thing, I feel like, is that he's just like an exceptional athlete.
Not a good baseball player?
Not necessarily.
You'd say he's a better athlete than a baseball player.
I would not be surprised if there was, like, a list of, like, the top athletes in baseball by some measurement that someone better at doing that kind of thing could, you know, whip up.
He's toolsy.
He's just, like, big and well-proportioned and knows how to use his body.
And fast.
And strong. And that's really all you need to be an athlete. I guess there's some other stuff that goes into, like, being a baseball player. But
he's got the building blocks,
yeah.
Solid.
Absolutely. You know where those building blocks came from?
Was it genetics?
Absolutely, it was. He was born in Germany to a mother who was in the United States Air Force, for one thing, and to a father who was a professional soccer player with the Bundesliga's FC Kaiserslautern. How'd I do?
Sounds good. I mean, I'm sure not great, but it's good enough.
Kaiserslautern. FC Kaiserslautern, featuring Frank Altair, Aaron's dad, won the Bundesliga championship the year that Aaron was born.
A good luck charm.
Yeah, which is cute.
That's nice.
I really wanted to dig up some stats. Like, I wanted to figure out how many goals Frank Altair had, maybe, but I don't know where to look. There's no soccer reference. Or if there is, he's not in there, so I don't know.
I also don't know.
Football Reference is going to give me Pro Football Reference. Here's football, the football.
Yeah, you know football.
Football. And if I type in Frank Altair, who's Aaron's dad.
Okay.
No hits.
Nothing.
Frank.
That's weird. Maybe the stats don't go back that far.
Well, here's a website called transfermarket.com with a player profile for Frank Altair that also doesn't have any statistics.
Oh, I was kind of interested in where the team Kaiserslautern plays, and it turns out they play in the German city of Kaiserslautern.
Yeah.
Which seems most notable for housing the football club FC Kaiserslautern.
Okay.
So it feels a little circular to me.
I mean, they play in Kaiserslautern. What else do you want to know?
I was wondering if maybe they played in a different city and it was just called that, but no.
It says he played for FC Homburg in 1985.
Okay.
It seems to stop after that. Like, there's nothing beyond the 1985-86 season in which he played in the second Liga for FC Homburg, in which he saw pitch time twice and was substituted in twice. But that's all the information. There's got to be a website that's like got all the stats, right?
I don't know. Maybe they didn't keep very good stats for the Bundesliga.
But shouldn't they? Why don't they care about stats? It's sports.
Because baseball is unique in how much it cares about stats.
I don't know. Basketball's starting to care about stats.
I would recommend, actually, Ben Lindberg did a series maybe a month ago that was all about statistics and sabermetrics in other sports.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember much about the soccer one, but, I mean, I do remember from cricket, which is much older than baseball, of course, that they fundamentally did not care about statistics until like 10 years ago. Like, they had like a couple things they kept track of, but they were kind of goofy, and it was way, way less than what baseball ever did.
Even beyond,
like, we've grown up with this kind of ethos of statistics being important, but a lot of sports seem not to care about them.
That's so odd, because like, even beyond the fact that like I'm a nerd and care about this thing,
yeah,
like, it seems like it's
it
kind
seems
of
so
a
important
core tenet like of sporting journalism. Yeah, it's how you report what happened in the game.
Yeah.
To me, anyways. I don't know. It's not there. Anyways, Aaron Altair moved from Germany to the U.S. 6 months old. He kind of disappears from the internet for a while and reappears in high school in Arizona. So I can't say that he spent the whole time in Arizona, because I imagine they moved around a lot as his military family.
Yeah, that's all right. We don't need to pry.
Yeah, it's fine. He was
unless just... you are Aaron Altair, which is actually a fifth kind of person that you could be.
Could be Aaron Altair. Could be you. Could be us. Could be Rajai Davis, or you could be you if you're Rajai Davis, or if you're Aaron Altair. But I still think that that's the same thing as... Anyways, Aaron Altair was a two-sport athlete in high school in Arizona. He was also a basketball player, just like Rajai Davis, although he never played football, as far as I know. He also turned down an offer to attend college in his home state of Arizona, just like Rajai Davis did. I don't know if Rajai Davis was offered a full ride, but Aaron Altair was.
I expect that he was not.
And the Philadelphia Phillies made a college scholarship look like a beggar's pittance when stacked up against their $150,000 signing bonus.
You can understand why he made the decision that he did.
Absolutely. College didn't cost all that much money in 2009 for Aaron Altair.
No, you actually did the math on this.
Yeah, $21,000 for in-state residents at University of Arizona.
Right.
In 2009.
As compared to $150,000 that he can receive and immediately put to use on PlayStations.
That guy could buy freaking 5 college scholarships if he wanted to.
That would be very nice of him if he wanted to do that.
He's going to keep them all for himself, though.
Oh, jeez, that's... not that generous at all.
He's going to go to 5 different colleges concurrently. He loves school so much.
Yeah, while playing baseball, which is pretty incredible.
He took that signing bonus. Why don't more people do that, man? You know?
Take a signing bonus and then simultaneously attend 5 different colleges while playing professional baseball?
No,
don't more people do that?
I was just going to say put their signing bonus toward their education, but I bet about a bunch of them do that.
I think a lot of people do that over the winter.
The Phillies drafted Aaron Altair in the 9th round of the 2009 draft. And he was a head turner because of his power specifically. In 2010, a year after he was drafted, he hit .304 in the GCL with 15 RBI and 10 stolen bases, but he also struck out a bunch and didn't walk that much. And for some reason, he was promoted. The story of Aaron Altair is that I think that he gives kind of like middle of the road performances for minor leagues, but people keep being like, "Oh, he's a pure athlete." At least that's kind of the vibe that I get.
Toolsy, more toolsy than he is performance. Good. Then he, dang it, he has more tools than he has performance.
Perfect. He was promoted from the GCL to Williamsport, short season A, where he hit worse, 287 with 10 RBI, although his strikeout-to-walk ratio shrank a little bit. And at the end of 2010, in spite of, again, which in the minor leagues, if you're like a top prospect, I would expect you to like, but I guess if you're like 10, it's really just kind of, it sort of balances out at that point. I don't know. Aaron Altair was named the Phillies' 10th best prospect at the end of 2010. And it doesn't seem like he did a ton to deserve that.
Toolsy. Athletic.
Yeah, fully just toolsy. Also, the Phillies had the 18th best farm system, according to Baseball America, in 2010.
So you can tell how highly people were thinking of Aaron Altair.
Yeah, exactly.
He was 10th best on the 18th best.
Yeah, other standouts from that list include Freddy Galvis, Jonathan Villar, VR, and Vance Worley and Dominic Brown, neither of whom are in the league anymore, I don't think.
I can't believe that Vance Worley is...
I think Swirly's a coach now.
Is that right? It seems like... I would have guessed that Vance Worley was like 35.
He is 32. I figure he... I thought he worked for the Pirates.
What's my friend Swirly up to?
I'm trying to find out.
He's got specs.
I really don't. I don't know. I don't even know what to look up. What is Vance Worley up to?
According to Wikipedia, he is currently a free agent.
Oh, okay. Well, get out there and sign Vance Worley. He's got a funny
name.
Yeah,
he didn't play last year.
I think that people should. What about Dominic Brown? How long did I remember Dominic Brown being like... Like I think he was the top prospect for the Phillies at the time, and I seem to remember some people thinking he was going to be something
he
special.
He certainly oughtn't to have been the top prospect, because there are some good players on that list.
Like who?
That were not Dominic Brown.
From Zephyr.
Yeah, he was the number one overall prospect in 2010 in the world.
In the world?
In baseball.
Is that true? Wow.
It's true. That's what Baseball America ranked him number one in 2010.
He was around.
Yeah, but he didn't exactly set the world on fire.
No, in 2014, Sporting News named Brown the worst defensive left fielder in the majors.
Yeah.
So, high highs, low lows.
He looks like he finished his career in 2018 in the Mexican League, much like Roger Davis.
Another connection. Okay. Let's keep going here. In 2011... He earned another promotion from short season A to single A, Lakewood, and stunk. It's odd at this level because there's just like so many different A's, like subdivisions of A.
He was playing in A-ball, you might say.
He was playing in A-ball and was demoted back to Williamsport. I'm not clear on whether the demotion happened because he wasn't performing, or if it happened simply because the short season began later.
Or just because they were moving rosters around and they didn't think that much of him.
Yeah, no, could be, but I'm saying, like, I don't know if maybe they were like, let's see if we can get this guy going in Lakewood before short season starts. And then if short season starts and he's not where we want him to be, we can just put him back in short season.
Certainly it's possible.
It's odd. It's a lateral move is what it... what it felt like to me. I mean, is a lateral move.
I mean, it's sad for Aaron that he did have to be demoted.
Well, you want to know what's happy about Aaron?
I absolutely do.
He was an all-star in short season New York Penn League that season. And after the all-star break, he was re-promoted to regular A. where, again, he didn't hit that great. He hit 260 with 5 home runs, 31 RBIs, and 25 stolen bases. That's the next season in 2012. And in 2013, 4 years after his drafting, he finally made it to High A.
Wow, not that good.
No, in Clearwater, Florida, where he hit 275 with 12 home runs, 69 RBIs, and 23 stolen bases. But you know what? The man struck out 140 times in those 123 games.
I could do that if I wanted to.
I bet you could.
So it's not, I'm just saying it's not that impressive if I could do it.
Well, no, it's not that I mean, it's not impressive, but, like, that's not... Okay. In 2013, Aaron Altair also played for the German national team in the qualifying rounds of the World Baseball Classic. But they did not qualify. They fell short to Canada.
Will he be allowed to play in this upcoming World Baseball Classic? I sure hope so.
What allowed to?
Probably. I don't know why I said that. I look forward to seeing him on the German team in the upcoming World Baseball Classic.
I think he did last time, too.
I hope so.
He's a proud kind of citizen of Germany.
Yeah. Did you hear that Tim Tebow is playing for the Philippines?
I did hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He has less connection to the Philippines than Aaron Altair does to Germany, whose father is a German person.
What is Tim Tebow's connection to the Philippines?
He was born there because his parents were missionaries.
Of course they were.
Tebow family.
Yeah. In 2013, in addition to representing his country on the world stage, Aaron Altair was also added to the Phillies 40-man roster for the first time, and was promoted to Double A, where he hit 245 in 52 games with 4 home runs and 23 RBI. Nestled deep within that 245 in 52 games was a 12-game streak when Aaron Altair caught fire and hit 417, which maybe got people a little bit hot and bothered for Aaron Altair. And
that's not very good. I mean, no, it's really... only over 12 games, and it's not even eye-popping numbers.
No, but they called him up from Double A.
Maybe they needed an outfielder.
They did. Tony Gwynn Jr. was on bereavement.
I understand.
But I'm sure that they had other outfielders that were...
They wanted to see what Aaron Altair had. They were tired of waiting for him.
I guess.
They said, show us what you got.
Well.
What did he have?
He had a first major league appearance that ended in a pinch hit pop-up in the 12th inning of a game against the Braves. And in 2015, he bounced back and forth between Double and Triple A, Lehigh Valley. And finally, the Phillies recalled him on August 18th. And finally, Aaron Altair recorded his first major league hit and first major league home run. And a short month later, Aaron Altair... Well, I guess... I don't know. It seemed like it had been a long road at this point. And at this, and finally, September 25th, 2015, Aaron Altair starts to make good. Is that unfair?
Yes, I think so.
Sorry. He'd already been exceptionally productive, but maybe started to make some headlines.
When he did something fun.
hit an inside the park grand slam in the third inning of a game against the Nationals, and an additional home run in the fifth. He is the 225th player in Major League history to hit inside the park grand slam, and was the first person to do it since Randy Wynn did it with the Tampa Bay Devil Rays of the 90s. And additionally, he was the first player since 1987 to hit an inside-the-park grand slam and another home run besides. Did I say 1987?
Yeah.
He's I think, one of two people to have ever done that.
I imagine that the list of people who hit inside-the-park grand slams is probably very heavily weighted toward the beginning of the century. Because I'm surprised there are that many people who have done it. And it seems like maybe something that happened more often before they had fences.
All right, let's have a look. This list is from 2002.
All right. So that's okay. I mean, that'll still answer my question.
Yeah, Aaron Altair is not on it, but just, you know, add Aaron Altair.
I will do that mentally. I've done it.
Randy Wynn and Tony Womack both did it in 1999.
Okay.
Dan Wilson did it in 98. Tony Gwynn has done it in 97. Chico Walker in 1991. Three people did it in 90. 89, 87, 85, 82, 80, 79, 77, 76, 76, 73, 71, 71, 70. Have I answered your question yet? I mean, there's like...
Well,
I mean,
can you scan the list for me and just tell me if there are more people doing it at the beginning of the century?
I don't know from more.
Well, it seems like there's like an average of one person doing it a year toward the end.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, let's go back here. 1881, 1882, 85, 86, 86... I mean, 1893 was a good year for it. There were three, four, five people. 1897, there were six. Yeah, so it probably did pick up a little bit, but it never went away. It doesn't seem like.
All right, well, this was maybe an unproductive line of questioning.
I don't think it was. I learned about Jigger Stats.
Is it the name of the website or the name of a player?
It's the name of a player who hit an inside the park home run in 1924. Inside the park grand slam.
Wow, that was actually an important line of questioning, something we know about Jigger Stats.
Wally Pipp has done it.
Wow.
Yeah. Willie Mays, of course, has done it.
I know him, personally.
Roberto Clemente. Yeah. It's an interesting achievement that requires a monumental mess up by center fielder Michael A. Taylor.
It wasn't the best inside the park home run I've ever seen. It was mostly a defensive mistake.
Terrible miscue by... Hey, what about if Tired is Johnny B. Good and Wired is Aaron Altair? I mean, is Tanner B. Roark?
Right. No, this is you're building on a joke that you told to me the other day.
Then inspired is Michael A. Taylor.
So this is just anyone with a middle name?
No, the Tired is Johnny B. Good, because it's
old. It's old. We've all heard Johnny B. Good.
But have you ever heard of Tanner B. Roark? No.
I mean, yes.
You've never heard of anyone B. Roark. Only Tanner. And then, like, inspired, this is like the Galaxy Brain one, where, like, it's just like, oh, like, what about Michael A. Taylor?
Honestly, that one kind of makes more sense, because maybe you can Michael A. Taylor.
But you could never Tanner B. Roark?
No.
You can't imagine a single situation in which Tanner would be Roark?
I can't imagine exactly one, and it's in the case of Tanner Roark.
Maybe more.
But I think the idea behind Johnny B. Good is that that's his name, but it also is like an imperative. Like, Johnny, please be good. Johnny, what does it mean to Roark?
It's when you're Roark. When you be Roark.
Right. But Michael, comma, a Taylor? That's Michael, almost a sentence.
Michael, a Taylor.
Right.
It is a sentence. Tanner, be Roark.
I guess that's a sentence, too. Assuming that Roark is a verb.
Or, like, something that you can be. Anything that you can be.
Not a verb, yeah, an adjective. Tanner.
Or a noun.
Be Roark.
Yeah. Johnny, be good. That's an adjective, I guess. But Tanner, be Roark. Anyways.
Yeah, it ought to be an adjective. But in the case of Taylor, it's not. It's a profession, a noun. But that's okay, because his middle name isn't B. It's A. Michael A. Taylor.
I found this thing on YouTube, that was a filmed production, I'm sorry, a stage production that was filmed of a three-person play that attempted to set out to kill comedy.
My goodness.
What it really was they didn't, I don't think that they actually followed through on their stated goal, which was a little bit frustrating, but they talked about, the play was about, like, Freud and, like, why, or, like, Freud's theories on what humor is and how humor works. Like, psychologically, and, like, why we find things funny, and what they actually did was, like, demonstrate, like, take his theories and, like, enact them, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very entertaining, but the goal was to, like, explain, like, the verbiage of it was all sort of scholarly, and so it was supposed to be, like, okay, like, we're getting bored and this isn't funny. But it wasn't. It was very well performed and was funny. Unlike now, where we're murdering a joke for no good reason.
So Tanner, if you are listening,
please be Roark.
Be Roark. That's our most fervent wish.
Aaron Altair, king of the Grand Slam, in 2017, hit another notable Grand Slam. It was the first Grand Slam ever allowed by one Mr. Clayton Kershaw, who had thus far carried a streak of 288 games over 1,917 innings, which was second only to Jim Palmer's record of 3,948 innings pitched without a Grand Slam, and it was spoiled by our friend Aaron Altair.
I know Kershaw was really broken up about it.
Was he?
No. Oh. I'm sure he wasn't that aware.
Yeah, I don't think it's... That seems like one of those statistics that sounds kind of sick, but it's actually so specific as to...
Well, I think it's interesting. I would be proud to be the record holder in that category.
Yeah, and 1,917 innings is an awful lot of innings to go without doing anything. You know, a streak is a streak is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and a lot of pitchers do give up Grand Slams. It happens with some frequency.
It happens as frequently as players hit them.
Approximately.
No, I think exactly.
I think there are exceptions.
You think there are exceptions to my rule, which is that for every home run, every Grand Slam that a player hits, there's a Grand Slam that a pitcher has given up?
Yep.
Give me one.
Sure.
Okay.
Say there's no pitcher on the field.
So, like, if the pitcher is, like, another player?
Say there's just no pitcher. Eight players. No pitcher.
How would you hit the home run?
The batter just tosses it up in the air.
And that's legal?
In this case, yes.
Perfectly legal. Oh, wow. Shake Milton, 26 points in the first half. Sorry, that's basketball. We're all dying. Okay. I'm sorry, I got distracted by
Twitter. Why are we all dying?
The Sixers keep getting hurt.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. That was kind of the last good thing that Aaron Altair ever did for the Phillies. He was all right in 2017 the rest of the way. He was demoted back to AAA in 2018. And in 2019, the Phillies DFA'd him, only for the Giants to scoop him up off waivers. They gave him... one at bat and DFA'd him 8 days after they signed him.
That's the Farhan Zaidi way.
If it doesn't work, don't commit to it. And shortly after that, the Mets claimed him off another waiver on May 23rd. He hit his dinger May 25th and his first at bat with the team, as we discussed. And then they DFA'd him two months later, the Mets did. Aaron Altair became a free agent October 1st and signed a 1-year deal with the NC Dinos of the Korean Baseball Organization.
Do you think there's a moral here about playing internationally or something? Or a further thread that links these two players?
I mean, apart from the fact that they are playing internationally and are like exceptional athletes who... I think the moral of the story... is that there are more good athletes than there are spaces available to play sports, like, at the, like, premier level.
Interesting.
I mean, that's obviously true, right? Like, there are more levels than just premier level, so obviously there are jobs for people who are, like, good enough athletes but are maybe not the best baseball players.
Yeah, for whatever. So maybe it's a happy ending that Rajai and Altair are both able to find gainful employment around the world.
There's room in the market for people like Aaron Altair and Rajai Davis.
Yeah.
Which is ultimately a happy thing. I mean, we've talked before about our enthusiasm for...
players finding their way in other countries.
In other countries.
Yeah.
That's a unique experience that you kind of only have access to if you're a particular type of athlete. You know, not just everybody... can say I can't get a contract in the majors, but I can still go to another country and, you know, play this game professionally. A lot of people have to just give it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, Rajai Davis, I think, lasted a lot longer in the majors than Altair. Absolutely. You know, there could be something left in Altair. He's young enough that he could, make waves in the KBO and make his way back to baseball. But for now, we'll see how he does.
He got a one-year deal.
He probably will never play in the major leagues again.
Well, I think this is really kind of betting on himself. We'll see how it goes.
I don't know why I'm casting about for a silver lining. That's season three. This is sad season.
Yeah, but this wasn't a very sad episode.
No, I guess it's sad in the sense that neither of these players have lived up to their potential.
Yeah, but what is potential?
Oh my god. What a good question.
I mean, like, you know, there's more space in the world for baseball players than there are good baseball players. So they'll always have their numbers on their side.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
Kind of.
All right, well, on that note of sense, we might as well wrap up the episode.
Yeah, what about sense, though?
I made a
It makes sense point. To stop talking?
No. I made a sensical point, and so I thought it was worth it to come out, you know, on top, as it were.
Very good.
Yeah, I don't want to end it on a nonsensical point. Hey, speaking of which, I got a snake fact for you before we wrap up. And it is that Guam, the U.S. territory, is home to over 13,000 snakes per square mile. The snakes outnumber the people. That's probably not true.
It is true.
Is it? Do the snakes outnumber the people in Guam?
Yes, by a lot. There are 2 million snakes in Guam and, like, I don't know, 300,000 people or something.
Not a bad ratio.
It's a pretty bad ratio, honestly. Not very good. The snakes are invasive, and they've eaten all of the other species that used to be there.
Yeah, that's not good. I'm sorry. I spoke too soon. People are always talking about places where cows outnumber people,
yeah,
or chickens outnumber people or something like that. And to me, that sounds great.
It's good with a lot of animals. Sheep, no problem with it.
You don't like snakes?
Snakes can be problematic.
I guess. I don't know. I'm not so, like, worried about, like, interspecies, like, violence or anything. I just feel like I think about it and I'm like, ooh, pressure's off, you know? Because, like, who's going to judge you? Like, a cow?
Yeah.
Cows are, with their judgmental eyes.
I mean, if there's one thing you can say about cows, it's that.
That's true, actually. They do that thing where they chew on cud, and that can feel
judgmental. Hurtful. Looks like they're chewing gum, which is also judgmental.
Just thinking about how bad you are. All right. But none of you are very bad, and neither are we, and neither is Aaron Altair, and neither is Rajay Davis. All very good boys and girls and non-binary people. That's going to do it for us this week on Tater Tots. As always, you can donate to Baseball for All. That's an initiative that gets girls involved in youth baseball programs around the country. It's very important. There's a link to that in our show notes. You can follow us on Twitter at Tater Tots Pod. You can like us on Facebook. Find the Facebook URL /Tater Tots Pod. Or you can email us, tatertotspod@gmail.com. Next week, the music man himself, the most podcastinest man in baseball, it's Stephen Brell. Does anybody else in baseball have a podcast? Probably, right?
Maybe. I don't know.
Stephen Brell certainly has a notable podcast and is a beautiful singer. And we'll talk about that next week on Tater Tots. Meanwhile, after too much, and also from running too fast, you'd run out of gas. But that's not possible. The littlest league possible.